Blog Talk Radio.
Please. Please. Allow me to show you something.
Where I'd rather be. So many places I can go.
almost missed my flight today. I look good even though I feel shitty. I just got back out this way. You already got plans for the city. Call them off, cause you call them off for me. You're always going on and on. Got it all, ask me why I never leave. I don't go out much, but you should come through tonight. Chillin' on the west side, boo. Call my homegirl, tell your best friend you can slide through. On the low, a remote location. I don't want to see me gettin' faded. You should come through tonight. I only kick it with a psycho. They won't tell, cause they tryna live their best lives through. On the low, on my own, I'll be waiting. Hit me on my phone, I'll be waiting. Yeah, yeah. Looking at you cry, going crazy. If I could, I would take the pain away. I don't see that smile I made. You already make plans that ain't with me. Trying hard, I've been trying hard to breathe. Inhale, exhale, you expel what you've been doing to me. Fighting it off, you've been fighting me off for weeks. Don't leave, cause I need you. But you should come through tonight. Chillin' on the west side, boy. Call my homegirl, tell your best friend you can slide through. On the low, I'm on location. I don't want to see me getting fed. You should come through tonight. I only kick you with a tackle. They won't tell, cause they tryna live their best life too. On the low, on my own, I'll be waiting. Hit me on my phone, I'll be waiting. Yeah, yeah. I ain't really tryna spend no time house. If you ask me, I don't feel it. I say yes to going out tonight. Oh, I did that in a minute. Call it off, oh, I called it off for you. You're always going on and on. Ask me why, oh, why I'm not with you. I don't go out much, but you should come through tonight. I'm chilling on the west side. Call my homegirl, tell your best friend. On the low, on the low location. I don't want them see me getting faded. You should come through tonight. I only kick you with a tackle. They won't tell, cause they tryna live their best lives too. On the low, on my own, I'll be waiting. Hit me on my phone, I'll be waiting. Yeah, yeah. Waiting. Hit me on my phone, I'll be waiting.
Now and I'm singing this song to you. You taught me precious secrets of a true love, holding nothing. You came out in front when I was hiding. Now I'm so much better, and if my words don't come together, listen to the melody, 'cause my love is in there hiding.
Sit right next to you, you. tier. This year, next year, every year, you've been here for every tier. You complete me even though I'm whole on my own. I had you on ice like the snow and it's gone. Look, you should slide my way, be easy on the brakes. Black ice, never catch me slipping, babe. I bought an extraordinary stay in the AO in LA. Put that shit on Stevie Wonder on replay, replay. We can get away, riding down PCH like it's back in the day. Now the record on replay, I'm by your side like Sade. Two lovers in a Bentley, cool. And I try not to show, my eyes can't hide, I'm feeling on the low. I just wanna two-step until it can't no more. Getting old sitting next to you.
Sometimes you gotta hear some good music. Get yourself back on track if you're listening to what I'm talking about. Welcome to War Council. Here on the 50 Radio Universe, the Starship, where we boldly go with poems that have never gone before. A For Real Entertainment Network. We encourage you to take your socks off. I'm baby, baby. Well, welcome. My name is Mahat. This amazing War Council thing, which is an egalitarian conscious community panel discussion that dialogues around current events, community issues, topics, things of that sort. So we rock out with our socks out so that you don't have to. Matter of fact, be 1 second. Well, I'm so rudely interrupted. All right, so we're going to do this for new people here real quick. This could be a long conversation, be a short conversation, depending on how many people come to the conversation. However, due to some emergencies that happened recently, I was a little bit off, but we're back on. But let me get to the meat and bones of it, of course, with our favorite instrumental. Now, let me give you my station manager, Mr. Van Meadows, a.k.a. Poetic. Mr. Meadows, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir, Javi. I'm here, bro. I am here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for picking up the slack in my slackness, sir.
No problem, bro.
Shout out to La Pearl and La Negra. Bob, it is here. Danielle, are you there?
Hey, hey, I'm here. Hello, hello.
All right. Oh, hello. Right. We're just rocking out. Get some stuff together. And, of course, we have Lisa Liz. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Hey, guys, what's up?
Ross, what's up? All right. And, of course, we have Edwina. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. All right. I've got some bat signals going out, so some people will probably be joining us on the fly, but it's okay. And also we have people who are just listening, which is cool. The vibe has been provided mainly by our station manager, because, you know, he's only a well, you know, everybody at Pimp, you got taste in their mouth when it comes to music. That's the one thing about us. Like, we all got really good taste in music. So you don't really have to worry about somebody playing something, be like, yo, why'd you play that? Like, why'd you play that?
Right.
You know, we used to be like, yo, stay out my playlist. Stay out.
That
part. Everybody got part. Taste in their mouth. Like, and so, you know, I was like, I didn't think about it that way, but I would have played that too. You know, so you ain't got to worry about that. You know, so if you've been vibing with the music, you know, that's one thing we do over here. We do music exceedingly well. But anyway, let's get to this topic. Oh, man, let's get to the topic, all right? Connection versus attachment. Sounds heavy, right?
Yeah.
You know, when we talk about connections, our actual connections to people, what places us into the relationships, how do we define our relationships by the little connections that we have or the attachments that we have. So I'm going to do a general question before we get into it and everything else, because, you know, most of us have our own perspective on it. And so what we're going to do is we're going to share that before we get into that. So, I'll just go down the line. I would like, so for you, Van, what is the difference between connection and attachment?
For me, connection is everything. Like, I don't want to have an attachment to somebody that I don't have a connection with. So connection means that we vibe on just about, you know, every level. There's something about that person that just draws me in. And that connection can, oftentimes it cannot be explained, because you feel it, I feel it. And then it creates this attachment where we never want to let go because of our connection. So that's what that means to me.
All right. La Perla Negra, what's your opinion on connection versus attachment?
Okay, I pretty much agree with Dan, but as far as the attachment thing, I think it's something that you tend to get attached to a person through something you have in common. And usually you both take a liking to that fact that you do have something in common. And it's kind of like a thread. You don't want to pop. Even when things start to go downhill, you always come back to that one particular thing or two particular things or whatever it is that you have in common. And you use that as an excuse to hold on. Like, well, we like this and we like that, and we get well doing, you know, we do well doing this together. Connection is definitely a feeling. Y'all know me, I'm always on some spiritual stuff, okay? So if I don't feel you connecting with me, which is usually a spiritual thing, then, yeah. So that's pretty much what it is with me. It's something that I feel deep within, that, you know, like Van say, I'm drawn to you, and it's pretty much we are drawn to each other. So that's my take on the difference.
That's what's up. Okay, so Lisa Lips, same question.
Okay, I kind of agree with Danielle about the connection being more of a spiritual thing, but I also think that connection is more of a mutual thing. You each have something that connects you to the other.
Whereas I see attachment as one-sided. You kind of, I'm attached to something that I see in you, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're attached to me in the same way. So I kind of see attachment can, an attachment can lead to some bad things down the line because one person's feeling something that the other one isn't. Whereas in connection, you both have this something that draws you together.
Wow. All right. So now I'm going to go over to you, Edwina.
Well, I agree with what everyone is saying. I think, but I feel like a connection is more symbiotic. It's like it's natural. You're drawn into one another, and things grow from there, and those things expand and become more substantial to you, whereas attachment seems more transactionary. Like that person meets a specific need or, you know, a specific deficit that you have and it kind of draws you into them or they're able to take advantage of it. But you're getting something in exchange for something else and that leads to a lot of obligation and resentment and things like that. But I think a connection, a genuine connection is more organic and natural and it feeds you. Where transactions kind of take away from you. You always feel like you have to be a certain way in order for things to function because it's not real. It's just a hand-to-hand thing.
It's a hand-to-hand. Ooh.
Yeah.
We're going at it. All right. So I pulled this, of course, you know, I like to pull articles. I pulled this from counselingresources.com. All right, and it says connection, any good relationship. He basically says, during my years of active practice as a therapist, I work with many couples with notable exceptions, situations which abuse of some type was present. It was always disheartening to witness the unraveling of a relationship. Therapists are bound to see more of their fair share of relationship failures because all too often couples often make a decision to seek therapy at a time when their relationship has already deteriorated beyond the point of easy repair. Whether the relationship was eventually salvaged or dissolved, one thing always stood out to me is the fact of making a real difference. Connections. The types of degrees and interpersonal types and degrees of interpersonal connection can exist within a relationship. They vary. The connections are purely physical or chemistry level. There are connections of purely physical or chemistry level. Their connection exists primarily at an intellectual level, an emotional level, even a practical lifestyle-based level. The relative strength of many different types of connections can make all the difference in the quality of relationship, possibly even determining the relationship will endure, be an instrument of fulfillment for both parties, or eventually fail. The quality of connection, i.e. the level of depth on any dimension matters. Connections at a purely superficial level are generally short-lived, although they can be very intense, right? So it comes as no surprise that many couples report the strongest connection they felt on the onset of the relationship was on the physical level. While the physical attraction and passion can be important aspects of the relationship, the initial chemistry can be one of the reasons why relationships fail in the end, especially when it dominates over any other kinds of connection upon a healthy relationship depends upon. An overly intense physical component of a relationship can often lead to distorted perceptions. For example, one partner might over-idealize the other, ascribing attributes to them that they don't actually have. They might have overlooked potentially problematic attributes as well as the lack of connection at other levels crucial to the survival of a relationship. Blindness to an important dimension of the relationship doesn't always come from physical infatuation. One partner in a relationship can be so lacking in self-esteem that so overwhelmed by the apparent recognition and approval they seem to be getting from their other partner, they allow the intensity of emotional connection to overrule their better judgment and aspect of the relationship. All right, so I'm going to stop right there because that's a mouthful. There's a whole bunch of stuff. So, you know, we're talking about different things and describing the ideas of connection. The one thing that we're saying that on the onset, you know, that the connection might be purely physical. So have any of y'all had a super physical connection to somebody? It was completely, like, connective. Like, you felt like the person connected to you physically. And that was the nature, that was the primary nature of your relationship. You don't have to say who or what. You don't have to tell your business if you don't want to. I'm just asking.
Well, mine's was more, wasn't physical, although the physical part of it was good. You know, that's not how I feel my connections with people. I can't really even explain. It's something deep inside that I feel. I mean, being physically attracted to a person, physically connected to them, that's a plus. But no, that's not how mine has gone. Mm-mm. That physical thing is more like a lustful, desired, verbal thing.
Anyone else? Anyone else? I mean, I
was going to say, I'm sure we've all had some type of physical connection to someone. It's just a matter of how physical are we talking. I mean, I got a physical connection with Jennifer Lopez and Jessica Alba. It's just not reciprocated. You know, it's just really how deep are we talking? I mean, are we talking, you know, physical enough where it's just purely physical? Because we all know that sometimes the level of physical that you can get involved in definitely can end up becoming mental, spiritual, and financial. So it really depends. But yeah, you know, I've had those physical relationships. As I said, they're just not often reciprocated back. So yeah.
Well, in that case, you know, I have a connection with Joe Scott and
See?
Leila Hathaway. That is not
See?
I'm reciprocated. You know. But in my
thank
head,
you. Thank
you.
You. Thank you.
I go to bed every night, you know. Well, I don't go to bed every night. I don't even be thinking about Jill like that. I think about it when I see her, you know. So I don't know if that's a real connection. That might just be attachment. Anyone else? Who's on?
Then you must have been really screwed up when she did that mic thing.
No, listen. When she did my thing, I think I had to watch that at least 700 times.
Bro.
I must have watched.
Oh God!
I must have. I cannot sit here and say that I didn't watch it. I do the number with way over 100.
I think most of the world.
I cannot confirm
that.
Or deny that I might have taken that video with me into a bathroom. I cannot confirm or deny that.
Hi.
You know.
Oh my goodness.
I had some honey molasses for him. I did have some honey molasses for him. Anyway.
Too much.
Oh my God!
Y'all know I'm like one of the biggest Scott stands on the first one. You know, when I got chosen to be like one of the first people on her podcast, man. Listen, y'all remember I was goofy as hell.
Well, no, it had to be.
I was goofy. It was ridiculous. I was like, wait, y'all chose me? What? I was like,
wow.
Let me stop.
I know you.
Anyway, mm-hmm. I will freely admit in my younger days, in my much younger days, connections weren't that deep. It was physical, but the people who I really connected deeper to were the people that I had multiple levels of connections with. You know,
right.
As opposed to not, as opposed to you know, because the physical is good, you know. But, you know, that's why I call it poison. Never trust a big butt and smile. Come on.
But physical connections are also transient. Because if the physicality changes, then your affection changes.
That's your point.
That's true. Okay.
That's true. I mean, mm-hmm. some of it can be anything else. I mean, I don't know. I've always seen things a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. Like, now it's like it has to be multiple connections or it's nothing.
Right.
Okay. It has to be. If it's not, I don't know what you're doing. Like,
right.
if you can't exist on like, you know, and I'm just speaking about me, I'm not speaking about everybody else. So if you can't exist in a mental connection, a spiritual
mm-hmm.
connection, an energy
mm-hmm.
connection, like, I don't, people
mm-hmm.
talk about chemistry. Chemistry is biological, but energy
mm-hmm.
is beyond all of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And when
mm-hmm.
and when someone has proper energy and it reflects upon you, like you can feel like it's beyond chemistry, because chemistry is like, you know, that's you know, that's arousal, that's your skin, that's your goosebumps and everything else like that. And that's fucking cool. That's cool as shit. But nothing beats
mm-hmm.
energy and a true mental connection and having people, you know. And the funny thing is, like, what I come to understand is your connection doesn't necessarily have to be an attraction or arousal. It could be for friendship.
Right.
It could be
right.
like, you know, like
right,
right now, like, for example, like, I can confidently say, like I'm practically doing all of this shit that I do with my soul tribe, literally, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I am connected to y'all in such a way that the energy, like it's, there's a certain energy when we're all together, and nobody can really deny
mm-hmm.
that about us. Like, it sticks out. People are, oh,
right.
no, we're right. Yeah, it's high energy. It's everything else. And that's the difference. But when it's connected to a person, it's not just the energy. It's all the different things that come in. Like, you know, I used to think that
mm-hmm.
you could be attracted to somebody. Like, some people say, oh, you know, I look at somebody and I'm attracted to them. You know, there's very beautiful people who are very ugly. Anyway,
yeah.
very
yes,
beautiful
yes.
on the outside, super ugly
mm-hmm.
on the inside.
Yes, sir.
Just nasty
ooh.
For no goddamn reason.
I know
reason.
A few.
And,
I know a few.
And entitled and act a certain way and think like, you know, like you're supposed to put up with their shit because they think that they're pretty. Like, you know,
yep.
you know. Somebody said something to me that was real funny. They said, he said, God don't like ugly, but he ain't fond of pretty either.
No, he's not.
Yo,
no,
so, I mean, so I'm going down this path because I'm thinking about, we had had conversations about PJ Washington and, you know, some of the, you know, the Instagram models who basically be like, okay, well, listen, you don't have to connect to me. You're going to pay for my beauty,
mm-hmm.
my time, my mm-hmm. effort. And I'm going to figure out a way to use you, take things from you,
mm-hmm.
do things certain, and work in it. And so, and work that whole thing where it has no connection whatsoever, right? And so the other
mm-hmm.
thing that we see play out in public, like Jill, Will and Jada, you know, they
mm-hmm.
have the worst connection. Like, to read that she basically married her because her mother pretty much browbeat her into doing it, which means she never really had a really good connection with Will.
Right.
And it's playing out before our eyes. We're seeing it. We're seeing it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's literally before our eyes. You
yep.
know, where someone is so attached to someone else, you know, that it's not a connection, it's an attachment. Will
mm-hmm.
acted out based on his attachment to Jada. You know,
mm-hmm.
and we see this in many other different relationships. We see people who are not establishing connections. They're basically going, oh, I'm going to go where the money goes. I'm going to go where this happens. You know,
mm-hmm.
we look at Black China, like, I literally was like, why would Black China all of a sudden come on to Rob Kardashian and make
mm-hmm.
a baby?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Y'all opinion on that? Let's talk about connection versus attachment on Rob Kardashian versus Black China. What's your
Rob was a way for her to remain relevant. at the time. You know,
yeah.
His family has the show that she was a part of, and so she made herself be relevant as part of that tribe, whereas she really didn't have any true connection with any of them. She just became an attachment.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely. Having the baby was the way to continue the attachment.
There you go. That's what I was getting ready to say. That is the attachment. That's that is their connection, their attachment, because there was no love on her part. She displayed this. She put him on display several times and embarrassed him, talked down to him any kind of way. If it wasn't for the fact that that family had the connections that they have and the money, the status, the fame that they have, she wouldn't have looked in his direction, okay?
Right.
Him, on the other hand, I believe that he found himself pulled towards her in the physical sense, even though I don't find her a very attractive woman. I think she's kind of funny looking, honestly, but I think he just, it was a superficial thing with him.
I think it was that she was kind of a trophy. She fit the trope of everything his sisters were doing.
Okay.
Yeah. His sisters had these high profile black men in their lives, so he needed something to make himself be seen.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Hmm. I can agree with that.
Then, for Edwina, do you have anything to add to it?
I mean, I kind of agree with what everyone has already said. I mean, the main thing for me is using the attachment to remain relevant, right? Because a lot of stuff that's playing out in the media denotes relevance when it comes to these stars, because we're the ones that give attention to what they have going on. If we didn't care, or if no one cared, guess what? Their relevance would die. But the fact
that
we just keep giving energy to them makes it relevant. So they stay relevant. They'll do whatever they have to do to stay relevant in the public eye. And it's unfortunate that, you know, reaching out to him and having a baby with him and all of that kind of stuff is in the public eye. We had this big family. We got these shows, whatever, what have you. So it's just, we give them the relevance. So they choose it and they use it to their advantage.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It seems like every relationship in that family, it serves some sort of purpose. It's not really, doesn't really seem like there's much built on a foundation or a desire for love. It's just, you know. So if that's the way you've been brought up to view people, they both have, obviously. I mean, Blac Chyna, I don't know how they can say that Rob was blindsided or like the victim in the situation, but she was this way for a long time. So it must have been something about her, if you look at the way the Kardashians operate, that benefited him at the time, and he probably just didn't expect it to turn out like it did. But there was no foundation for something more meaningful to grow from that situation, because she was, you know, I don't even know what her profession was, but look, that's what Kim is saying.
She was a
like, what did you start from? Yeah.
Stripper
She was a stripper. Him, he's just a Kardashian. That's it.
Right. Yeah, he was a Kardashian. He's a Kardashian. He was kind of awkward. He was not the hot guy. He was none of those things. And Blac Chyna represented all the things that he was never supposed to have. He wasn't supposed to have a hot stripper chick. You know, so, yes. That made him relevant.
Rapping a little bit, but it didn't work out too well. But if you ask me, honestly, none of them have a skill. None of them. What do they do?
Right.
Really? What do they do?
Right. They're famous.
They just
capitalize.
Right.
There's no
they capitalize on our attention the same way everyone does.
Absolutely.
They capitalize on the attention that they get. And that's all
it the only one that I know of that had any kind of skill was Kim. Not only did she climb to the top with the men, but she actually was a stylist to the stars.
Climb, baby, climb. Oh, I'm sorry. Forgot my mic was open.
What did you say?
She did some climbing.
Yeah, she actually was,
she
was a stylist.
She
was a star.
She climbed on top of that one.
Lord have mercy,
honestly.
Lord. But other than that, the rest of them, I don't know. I mean, what's the mom's name?
Chris.
What's the mom's name?
Kim.
Chris, isn't it?
Okay. If it,
yeah, her name
if
is Chris.
For Robert,
yeah.
If it wasn't for Robert, they wouldn't. You wouldn't even know about these people. You wouldn't know nothing about them if it wasn't for Robert Kardashian, because that's where the money came from.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just built on that, being, you know, going on the host role and doing what they do in Hollywood. So that's it. I mean, other than that,
actually,
they got pretty kids.
I cause for speculation because, you know, my speculation is based off of this, you know. We do know that their father was a famous lawyer and everything else, and he provided the riches that they enjoyed. We understand that one of the Kardashian sisters was had by, but she basically cheated on him with a hairdresser and had the other sister. The one thing that's very clear to them is that they have utilized, like, I'm going to sound really, like, crass and gross, but, like, I've never seen a family utilize black teen to achieve so much riches, fame, and success. And it always starts with the penis. Because regardless of the fact of anything that happens, they spun themselves. The mom brokered a deal with Ray J, which he's talking about it freely now.
Yep.
So a lot of that tape. You know, Ray J was getting $30,000 a month from this tape. Still does. He's still collecting that money on this tape.
Yep.
But she called him and talked about she wanted to make a deal. They took the infamous thing of that tape and was able to parlay it into everything else. One of the sisters, the one that has a baby with Travis Scott, is almost a billionaire, if not a billionaire now, you know, and had black babies. If you notice, there's a particular trend that they're following. They dress, they use their bodies, they emulate, you know, I call it, you know, blackfishing to a degree, you know. Make yourselves look as ethnic as possible, but still keep your whiteness, you know, your whiteness, your privilege.
Yeah,
your
keep the white girl.
And while you're, and so while you're doing all of these different things, and then you're going out and you're having, you know, babies, like, I guess, you know, like, I guess Courtney, you know, she's going to like what she likes, although I do believe that her and Travis Barker, I think that is a real thing. I think that's a real thing between the two of them, because, like, I've never seen, like, when I look at her in the media, and I actually look at it from his perspective, and he was on something explained, like, he was talking about his house and his cars and stuff like that, and the way he was talking about her, like, when he used to be with Shannon Mochler, he never talked like that when he was with Shannon. But when he's talking about her, he was talking really positive, really. It was a real, like he's like, yeah, and blah, 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 and when the kids come, and this is what me and her like to do. Like, and he was very, like, matter-of-factly. So, you know, when somebody's matter-of-factly, they're not really trying to put shit on. They're just talking about just normal shit to them. So that's how, you know, like, they was really ingrained. And then Kanye has said that Travis is the realest motherfucker out here because they wasn't trying to tell me where my kids was, and he was the person who told me. You know, so he's his own person in this whole mist of all the shit that goes on. He's got his own money. He doesn't have to worry about none of the shit that they talking about. So he just does him, and I think that makes him happier. But I want to get back to Rob. When we're talking about Black China, Rob had always had self-esteem issues from the start. Mm-hmm. He was never the same as Kardashian. He was always a fat one. Yeah. He was always talking about him secondhand. Like he was just attached simply because he was blood. And so when everybody mm-hmm. else is attempting this whole thing of finding these black men who are superstars and everything else, I think that he took that same route, but he chose Black China. And then mm-hmm. even if the fact that knowing that Black China had a child with Tiger, who Tiger was seeing the sister and everything else like that, he wanted a piece of that pie too. And so what had happened was when they had the show that they was doing, you see Black China being super pathological. You see Rob mm-hmm. having breakdowns after breakdowns.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that Black China literally was the predator in this situation when it came to them. And so she focused on creating a false connection while allowing him to become attached to her, because he would be like pleading for her. And she would be ultra violent mm-hmm. with him, you know, like be ultra violent with him, yelling and screaming, do all this stuff, take things away, do all this stuff, break up, because she wanted to control the aspect of the situation, because she wanted her child to be born into that power and influence, and that she did. Now, also, you know, her mom is Tokyo Toni, former stripper, porn star, all the different things. Even to this day, Tokyo Toni is still trying to get shows and trying to do stuff to earn money and do all this other things that are happening. You know, so I believe this style of attachment, reattachment, detachment is developed for Black China to prey on certain people to get those type of things out of them, because they want their power and influence and everything else like that. Now we've seen her go from different things to, you know, sex tape slipping out, her sleeping with, like the last sex tape, she was sleeping with that kid. He was a kid. He was a fucking kid. And she's mm-hmm. just doing all this stuff on camera. And I was like, I know you don't need the money that bad, but this is what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then he's putting it out there, anything else. And a similar thing, when we're talking about it, I think that some of the people who do it, like, it's almost like formalizing a connection in order for these things to happen, and making attachments so that people can form and be with the people that they want, because it allows them to have the things that they think, they perceive, and they dream. Like, if you look at how Kanye was literally going, like, I really believe he has some mental health issues. I believe that he went off the deep end when his mother died, and he's not been right since, and he doesn't have enough good people around him to really encourage him to do things. Although the shit he did with Adidas, I think, was brilliant, because that was the worst fucking deal ever on paper, and they were starting to steal his designs and move him out. You know, so mm-hmm. when you look at some of the stuff that he did, it looked crazy, but it's actually pretty brilliant. Because he got himself out mm-hmm. that deal, you know. Mm-hmm. He really did. But when I look at the new sneakers that they're making now, literally, I saw it the other day. I was in North Carolina. I was like, yo, I said, yeah, I seen these. I said, but these look exactly like the Yeezys. And it was funny mm-hmm. because Sway had told me, said, yo, why don't you sell your product directly? And he was yelling at Sway, like, Sway was crazy. Now what does he want to do? He wants to sell his products directly. He wants to cut out the middleman. He wants to do all this other thing, and that happens in business. But he just recognized it way too slow, and all this other stuff. They took away his billions. They did all this other stuff that was going on, because he's like, oh, I'm speaking the truth now. I said, yeah, but you're acting like a Stark Raven mad fool running around with Make America Great hats on, all this other shit. All right, I digress. Back to what we talked about. I want to get into this whole thing about attachment versus connection, and I want to get into the different things, because somebody said something to me the other day about anxiety and avoidance and things of that sort, and so I looked into some of the stuff, and it was talking about, you know, what are attachment styles, all right? So this person says it from this particular portion from what he's stating, and this comes from theconversation.com, right? And it says, how secure or insecure we are with our romantic partners depends in part how we bonded with our parents at a young age. From the day that we were born, we turned to our parents or guardians for love, comfort, security, especially in times of distress. For this reason, we will call them attachment figures. When our attachment figures respond to our distress in ways that meet our needs, we feel comforted and supported. Our distress is reduced. We learn our attachment figures can be counted on in stressful times. But if parents often reject the child's distress by downplaying their emotions, rejecting their pleas for help, or making the child feel foolish, the child will learn not to trust their attachment figures for help and suppress their worries and emotions and deal with them alone. These downplaying strategies are called deactivating attachment strategies. Right? While these parents respond to a child's distress by being interested in the support they provide, not providing the right kind of support, sometimes they recognize their child's importance, and other times they don't acknowledge their distress. They focus on how the distress made them feel rather than helping the child manage their feelings. Or some parents might provide support, but it's not what the child needs. For example, a child might need encouragement to deal with a challenge, but the parent tries to be sympathetic and agrees that the child can't deal with the challenge. Regular exposure to these kinds of parent experience means those children can experience excessive worry, especially with stress, and go to a lot of effort very close to attachment figures. These strategies of increasing worries or seeking excessive closeness are called hyperactive strategies, right? So one thing he didn't talk about is, like, he didn't put too much trauma in there, too, because what happens if this parent subjects the child to trauma or doesn't respond to the trauma that the child has experienced? And that also has a tangible effect on how attachment style is formed. If you know that your parent is not going to be there, say your parent was neglectful, was in usage of some type of drugs or, you know, drugs or alcohol, or allowed abuse, physical, mental, spiritual, you know, sexual abuse happened to you and did not cope with it or acknowledge that it actually even happened. You know, all of these things actually have to be put in there too. All right. So the one thing they were talking about was the attachment style and the results of how to rate two factors, attachment anxiety and attachment avoidance. And attachment anxiety ranges from low to high, with people with high on attachment anxiety exhibiting a high need for approval, intense desire to be physically or emotionally close to others, especially romantic partners, and difficulties in containing their distress in emotions and relationships. Attachment avoidance also ranges from low to high, with people high on attachment avoidance exhibiting a distrust of others, the discomfort being intimate and emotionally close to others, excessive self-reliance, and the tendency to suppress their worries and their emotions. People who rate low on both of these is a secure attachment. They're trusting of others, comfortable in sharing emotions, being close to others, tend not to downplay it, exaggerate their distress. They also feel confident in problem solving challenges and life stresses, as well as turning to others to support. Now, I say that to say this, all right? How many of these attachment styles, and you don't have to tell your business, you don't have to share if you don't want to share, but how many of these attachment styles may you have gone through based on your relationships, your earliest relationships to the type of relationships with people that you form now?
All of them. Now, I'm better. I still guard myself when it comes down to how I'm really feeling if something hurts me. I haven't gotten past that because my mother did not bond with me. My mother put me in a lot of really messed up situations, and I came from a very twisted family, a very secretive home, and a lot of things took place, and there was no protection. I tried to speak on it. It was discarded. My feelings were invalidated. So even with my husband, I still would find a private place to cry or deal with my emotions. I've always been uber affectionate. Because my twin actually gave me that. I got that from him. My bonding and being able to be completely myself came from the relationship with my twin. But anybody else in my family, man, they traumatized the hell out of me. So I will tend to be withdrawn when it comes to something that's really, really messing with me deep inside. I mean, I can express my emotion. I'll cry, and I might even holler a little bit. But if it's really, really something that's bothering me, I'll keep it to myself. I will give people what they need. If they need somebody to talk to, if they need to have some inspiration, because I believe in that because I didn't get that. But as far as me internally, y'all don't know what's going on with me. Pretty much. So I've experienced all of that. My partners, the ones that I've had, they know I'm human. They know that I do get hurt, but it was more so I just kept it away because it was hard for me to let it out because I just didn't have that opening. It was always be quiet. That didn't happen. You know, don't do that. Don't say that. You know, just that's how it is. But I'm a very loving person.
That's true. I do know that that's actually true. Anyone else?
For me, I think coming from my childhood, my parents had this way of giving me everything and then snatching it away. They would let me, like when I was in high school, there was a dance troupe. I joined the dance troupe. They let me do all the practices. I was at all the rehearsals or whatever. And then when it came time for the performances, they wouldn't buy me the costumes, so I could never actually do the shows. So I was taught this whole, when everything is going perfectly, look for the other shoe to drop thing. And I still do that today. So it's hard for me to accept people being good to me, because I'm always waiting for them to snatch it away.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. Anyone else? Yeah.
Can I ask
for
a
me,
question?
I'm sorry. Definitely. After I make this statement, but for me, I think it's a very weird and strange thing for me because as a person who suffers from anxiety, who practices avoidance of certain things, I am much more secure upon my person than I've ever been in my entire life. And it's still very hard for me to be completely open, because I have also the fear, like, of being hurt because of the type of relationships I formed, because of how things were with my mother. Like, the hardest thing for me to tell my son is, like, you know, your grandmother was physically abusive to us growing up, and this is what she learned, and this is the reason why we're like this in this particular thing. And he's like, why would you never tell me? I said, it's not for me to make you look at your grandmother any differently, as long as she never tried to put her hands on you. You know, because I had to go through certain things, you know, and I realized that the root of a lot of my anxieties was because of how I was treated in a particular way. If somebody did something wrong, we all got beat, you know. And so literally, like, I write my poems, I'd be like, you know, my mother would be mad because we all look like Jimmy, which is my father. And we all are different aspects of it. And so when someone who is not dealing well with their own feelings and their emotions and can't hear their children, and they're doing the best that they can do, they don't have the counsel or the support, and then their person doesn't support them or give them what they need, tell them that you made your bed, you gotta lie in it. It's a lot of different things that occur. And it's like almost like this thing, there is this hidden anchor that mills about the neck of my mother that I fight against. And I realize that most of the relationships I've chosen for women have been because they have some type of aspect of something that I needed to save in them that came from my mother. Because of my mother, you know, you say like I'm so much able, I'm so better to write some of the poetry because all the repressed memories are coming back upon prompts when I hear things, you know, and who we are and we're practicing things allow us to, you know, that's I so I put up the thing like me and Omari have a conversation. I said, you know, poetry. He said, well, hip hop saved his life when we talk about hip hop, and I was like, well, poetry saved my life. This is what it did for me, and I posted it. You know, just to see how people felt about it, because I already knew, like, it's therapy, you know. You know, funny thing is, I think Rare has a friend, Journey Poetess, and she has this thing, you know, it's called Cupid and Therapy, which is poetry, which I think is brilliant. But a lot of styles that we move through, like, we practice them at different times, you know, where we're secure. Like, I believe that I had a lot of father wounds, but really I had a lot of mother wounds. And then what I requested from my father was something that he didn't get from his father. You know, he left home at 17 because he wanted a life. My grandmother tortured my mother, stole all her, like all my baby pictures and all this other stuff that my father took that he gave to my mother. My grandmother outright stole them, just outright took it. You know, and that was a wound for my mother that she never got. And so it was very hard for them to be in the same room. And only now, in my elder state, am I able to understand all of these different things and how it completely had a tangible effect on how I saw it. And that's why I was like, you know, like for me, you know, me, even with my ex-wife, I had an attachment because she knew how to leverage me through my children because I wasn't going to leave my children in a situation because she wasn't capable, no matter how much she said she was, of actually providing a nourishing. And so now those two as adults are so different now. Like, you know, I'm literally having this conversation with my son today about this poem. Like, he's like, I'm not creative to write poem. I said, it's not how to write. You don't want to write like me. You write like you. And I was like, are you going to tell her what else? Because he's getting ready to get engaged. Hope, you know, I hope he's not listening to this program. I don't think he is. But he's getting ready to get engaged, right? So this whole thing about him, he's like, I have to come to you because this poetry thing has been you, and how I respect poetry is how you've treated, you know. And I'm seeing the styles of all the different things that are happening. All right, so I'm gonna lay my plan. We all go through different things for the different styles of attachment that we have, you know. And then sometimes attachment can ruin the connection, the inability to let certain things go. The inability to surrender to a true connection, you know, because of an attachment. So I just wanted to put that out there before we act, because that's the next thing I'm going to. But anybody else, I'm sorry. You had a question, Danielle, I'm sorry.
Yeah, because of these, I'm going to call them bad experiences, the messed up situations that we come from as children, now being adults, how is it when you are interested in someone? Do you find it hard to pursue that person, or do you fall back and just allow them, or what? Do you have no issue with that?
Are you asking me, or are you asking in general?
Everybody.
Repeat the question, Danielle, please.
Do you have an issue with pursuing someone that you're interested in, or do you fall back?
Yeah, I don't have a problem pursuing someone that I'm interested in. I mean, that's the whole purpose of you being interested in someone is the, at least for most men, we're hunters. So we don't mind going after what we're interested in. The issue becomes when the desired outcome of what we're interested in doesn't yield a profitable gain for us.
Okay.
Man, I guess I must miss Wendell, huh?
The shade. Ooh. What about the rest of you guys? Do you guys have an issue with pursuit?
For me, you have to show me your interest. If I'm interested in you, I will pay attention to you, but I won't make the first real move. I need you to show that you are interested, because I don't deal well with being rejected. So I need you to give me something before I will make a play. Yeah, and you know, for people who do pursue me, because I'm so used to having the rug snatched from under me, I have to see real interest from you if you're pursuing me.
Yeah.
Before and when I'll give in to some extent, but I'm always waiting for that other shoe to drop.
Okay. Yeah. Man, we got similar mindsets.
Yeah. Oh man. I was trying to get in with the conversation about the security from, you know, a perspective of parents, and it made me realize how those things affect even at my big age, they still affect my relationships now because, like, you know, we could go through all of the battle scars of exactly the things that I went through because of my mother and the fact that I lost my father at 6, I lost my mother at 20. But before that, there was a lot of issues of, like, abuse and foster care and being taken away. But then as I got older and, you know, I resented my mother for a long time. I felt like she never loved me, and I felt like my father never loved me enough not to do the things that led to what ultimately ended his life. But then once I got a little older and learned more about their lives, it's like, you know, it's kind of like a cycle. And then I realized that my closest relationship similar to a father relationship was my brother for as long as I can remember. Like, I can't remember my brother being strung up by his feet and being beat because of trying to protect me. But he was always the type of person was like, nobody else can beat you up, but I'm going to freaking terrorize you for fun, you know, from a very small age. And then I realized my first, you know, adult attachment that was serious is like, he was similar in that way. And I attached to him because it's like, there's a protection, but there's also the sacrifice of knowing that, this person thinks that they can run roughshod over your life, but no one else can do it. So they're going to push everyone else around and leave you on this moat. But it resembled so closely the neglectful relationships that I'd experienced before that it seemed comfortable, even in all of the ways that I can look at it and say that it was inappropriate or it wasn't right for it to be treated that way. You accept those things based on those unhealed wounds stemming from those original relationships. And but as far as relationships now, I'm realizing that there's so much of those things, that shadow work, that healing of that previous trauma that we really need to do, but we oftentimes take into another relationship and expect that new person that's making us happy to also be responsible for taking on and making that baggage a little bit lighter for you. And it's not really fair, you know? So,
right.
I don't know. Yeah, so it's like, I don't know that I'm 100%. I think that's my biggest issue is leaving the or learning to let go of those negative attachments while being healed enough to fully embrace and fully reciprocate a whole and loving relationship. I think that that's more important than, you know, just trying to get into those openings as they come, or like taking an opportunity before it's time to, before you get a chance to heal yourself. That's my perspective on it right now. That's what came to me as you guys were talking. I'm learning a lot from your conversation.
No, it's okay. It's okay, because this is a very deep conversation. It's a very, very deep conversation. And so, I mean, you know, that's the one thing, because when we, when we're talking about the things that, that are our connections versus our attachments, you know, a lot of us have way more attachments than we do actually connections. And it's, a lot of our attachments are formed because of the different things of how, you know, the things we grew up with, the things that, that make us, you know, who we are. Like, you know, I really believed that I had father wounds. But now that I understand exactly what my father was, and it's like crazy because now, like, every time I want to connect with my father or do something with my father, because he has his wife, because she doesn't have those type of connections, she interferes. She's an interfering type person because she wants to be in on things that weren't for her in the first place. And so it's like weird because it's like one of my father's greatest joys is to hear the good things that he did do that, that changed things. And, you know, and it's like, like literally when you have someone who's like that, where he's like, okay, I'm talking like one of the worst things that ever happened, which incensed me. Like I had to leave. Like I literally had to leave because I know I was going to be, because I wanted to find out about my great grandfather. And my father was giving me everything that I knew. Like my father was telling me his memories, which equally made me feel good. Like he was talking about how he would sit with his grandfather and they would put, you know, peanuts into the Coca-Cola. And you know, that's a really Southern thing. Like I used to think that like I'll say that's some country bumpkin shit, but no, that's really what they're, he's like, yo, it was a fantastic time, blah, 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 blah. I was talking, you know, different things, you know, and she couldn't help herself but to interrupt. Like she just couldn't take it. Like she just had to keep coming and interrupting and talking loud. And I was just like, yo, what's wrong with you? Like this is a moment. Like I'm learning me through him. And it's making me better. It's healing me. It's giving me what I need. It's helping me to form my foundation so that I can move. You know? And the thing is, like, and he had to keep it clean. It's like, yo, she didn't have that. She doesn't know what that looks like. She doesn't know how that feels. She doesn't understand the connection between certain things. Like, you know, she would say inappropriate stuff all the time. And so, and then, you know, I would have to go through the whole thing with my father. And my father would, like, warn her. He's like, yo, he's gonna snap, and it's not gonna be, and he's not gonna care about nothing. He's gonna give you the business, and it's gonna hurt your feelings, you know. I'm just learning to maneuver around certain things because I get to the point of how those things, and I realize that my father wounds weren't really what they were, as opposed to the wounds I had with my mother. Imagine you go to your brother and you discover there's this whole section of history that your mother never even told you about. And she was going to die with this lie. She was going to die not telling you shit. And you got pictures, you got everything. And you're like, why would you do that? Like, why would you do that to me? Why would you do that to the whole family? Why would you do that to us? Why? That shit don't make no fucking sense. Like, this is us. No matter good, bad, or indifferent, you have to give us what we need. We are going to walk around with bits and pieces on the inside of us, broken and shattered and charred, and we're going to cut somebody the fuck up because we don't know how to heal our shit because you've got these pieces that are fucking missing. It's the worst thing in the world. You know, and so, you know, I've become very protective in a lot of ways over my female friends, like people who are close to me. I am super protective. I'm almost like a fucking pit bull. It's bad. And it's because I love how people become part of my life, become part of my puzzle, and help me to heal myself through good friendship, connection, and great energy. And I'm very protective of that. It's very important to me because the wounds that I have from my mother, you know, that I have from my mother, if I couldn't get it from her, I have to figure out how to heal myself for it. This is a really fucking deep conversation. I'm landing my plane. Somebody else talk.
Do what? Like we got another call, bro.
I can see that in you. I can see that in you and the friendship that we have and the way that you are protective over us as women. And it's very endearing because I don't have many friends who are that way. And I know that I can trust you because you have that heart.
Absolutely.
Wait, hold on. Somebody just came in. Area code 614. Wendell, is this you?
Yes, my brother, it is I.
Yes.
He saw the bat signal.
He saw the bat signal. He saw the bat signal.
Bat signal.
He saw the bat signal. It just got more eloquent around here.
Indeed. Welcome, good brother. Welcome, good brother.
Absolutely.
Thank you, family. I appreciate it. Glad to be with you all once again. I was just listening in on Mojave's, you know, what he was sharing, and definitely I felt the weight of that just coming in and listening in on the conversation, and it hearing about those pieces. It just reminds me of something that I've heard a long time ago, is that we all have each other's pieces. We were built for connection. So, you know, for one piece to deprive another piece of its ability to connect is a terrible thing. And then the entire picture becomes blurred and indistinct when those connections are severed or when they're not able to be fully and completely made. So, I felt you, brother.
No, thank you. Thank you. You know, the funny thing about what we do over here and work out, we're able to share the like, we're able to be open with each other and be able to share that. So it's like a lot of times people like run away from certain things, but it's like when we talk about things, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. Like in the new year, I want to do some more green flag healing. Let's develop some strategies to do more positive things, because I think that's what we kind of need to be in the world, to give out more things that happen. Even when we're talking about these conversations to open things up, it is a healing factor that comes about. But literally, yeah, you know, we were trying to get into this connection versus attachment thing. So since you came in, you know, what do you feel about connection versus attachment? And, you know, given particular styles of things that you might be into, this could be very different, a different perspective for all of us to hear from you.
So the way I govern myself in relationship, you know, to anybody, platonic or otherwise, is that I seek for and I seek to attract the organic, authentic, mutually beneficial connection. And in so doing, when a connection is made, it creates the opportunity for attachment. But it doesn't necessarily mean that attachment is going to happen. I do believe in the laws of detachment, that people are going to be where they are. They're going to do what they're going to do. You know, they're going to be where they are for as long as they choose to stay. And it's okay, because I'm in charge of me, and they're in charge of them. And so the connection is an agreement. It's a point of connectivity where agreement can exist or where agreement can be rejected. And if the two parties that are a part of the connection agree to attach, then attachment happens. And they get to negotiate the terms of their agreement. But if no agreement is reached, then connection can still be there. It just won't be. There will be detachment.
Okay.
The depth of our relationships and the depth of the gravity that we have in each other's lives, the weight that we have in each other's lives is a direct reflection of the degree of attachment that we have. Sure. Because I can't mean more to you than you allow me to. You have to agree that my presence in your life carries weight, and vice versa. And so, when there is connection, which assumes, which hopefully is based on good faith, then that entire set of that entire chain reaction, that entire domino effect, has the opportunity to begin, but it's all intentional. I've never been unintentionally attached to somebody.
Say that again. Look. You want to spin the block on that one? Spin the block on that one. Never been what?
Unintentionally attached to someone. I may have been unintentionally connected to someone. I may have come in contact to someone, and there may have been some type of attraction there that led to a connection. But if there was not an intentional decision for me and that person to decide to be something of substance to each other, then all we have is connection. And I don't know if you've ever, there are different types of knots. You know, there's slip knots and there's square knots and all kinds of knots. And some knots are easy to undo.
Right.
And other knots are inseparable.
Mm-hmm.
So, two people coming together, creating a connection. Just because you can tie a slip knot, but how about this? When you tie your shoelace, the bunny ear knot there, it doesn't take much to undo a shoelace. Undo your shoes. You know, you can be walking down the street and trip over a loose shoestring. But if that knot is done in a certain type of way, it becomes very, very unhard to do. You ever had that, when you tie your shoe the wrong way and the bunny ears come loose, and now you've got that little itty bitty tiny super tight knot that you
super
can't get
knot.
Undone, and you got to yank your shoe off and everything. So, that's what happens when the decision to connect goes beyond happenstance. Some knots are not easy to undo.
So
I just bring it back to say that there are people that you're going to connect with. I mean, shoot, you can walk down the street and shake somebody's hand, and that's a connection. It doesn't mean that that's an attachment.
Right.
Or you can meet a stranger in the in Starbucks, and that connection, that initial eye contact, can lead to a greeting and a connection, which may actually end up turning into a lifelong relationship.
True.
There's the opportunity for attachment with every connection, but attachment is intentional. I've never been in a situation where someone has been a part of my life for the long term or for an extended period of time without there being some type of intentionality behind it. So it's not a haphazard thing. There's some type of purpose there. And so that's what I mean when I said I've never had an unintentional attachment.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Wow. See, Van went and got you, so he's here.
Yeah, man.
You came in here. Like you came in here like the candy man, but you were the eloquent man. So open up the dictionary and say Wendell's name three times. Wendell. He'd be like, I come with a 1600 on the SAT. It's important because, you know, you come through and you be hammering stuff, but everybody be coming through like talking about things. But you know, the one thing I believe I put the clip in the thing. I don't know what it is, and I'm not gonna go look for it now. Well, we put the clip in where they were talking about the difference between connection and attachment, and the ladies like an attachment. You put all of your own particular stuff into the attachment, have expectations, where a connection just allows certain things to be free. So my question is this: what gave you greater love, connection or attachment? And I'm just gonna put that on the floor. I'm gonna put it on the floor, and I'm gonna back away slow. Retreat to the corner. You can take it how you want to take it. You know, you have to tell you your business. But which one gave you the greatest love, connection, or attachment?
You want me to answer that?
It's for everybody. So yeah, man. You answer that.
I'm simply say this. I'm single. So love to me was prematurely fake, however you want to call it. Because if you genuinely love someone, right? My first ex-wife used to say this to me all the time, right? She used to say, I love you enough to let you go. And if you were meant to be mine, you'll come back. I ain't coming back. So I can't say connection or attachment gave me the greatest love because I'm still trying to find the greatest love.
That's honest. That's honest.
That's real. I would say it's to me it kind of begs the question of quantity versus quality. When you're saying the greatest love, because I have connections that love me up to the limit of their capacity. I've had attachments that love me in a much deeper sense, in a much more profound sense. So I can have a certain quantity of connections whose aggregate love, when placed on one side of the scale, is counterbalanced evenly with the weightiness of one true attachment love. Mm-hmm. So it's about, for me, it's about where are you in life and what kind of love is going to be most effectual for that point in your journey. In my particular love style, I find myself moving from a place where I've been content and satisfied with with a you know, with a bunch of, or a multitude, a plethora of connective loves, and now I'm wanting something that's much more substantial, something more weighty, something more primary or an anchor, something that would allow me to go past the surface and get into more of the deep connective, you know, aspects of relationship. But until such a time as that relationship manifests itself, I am not without love. And it is my hope, and I won't dare say my expectation, or it is my desire that other connection, the more weighty connection, the anchor connection, that when it does come, that it will give me that deeper sense of love. So it's really about what you need and what's going to be most effectual in your journey to this point.
Okay, well, I allow myself to be used so much in the relationships that I was in. I didn't experience real love on their part, so I can't say anything about a great love or love, period. I was beneficial to them. I did love, but I didn't receive it. It was more of a, I was shown some affection and attention because, like I said, I was beneficial to them. But my greatest love that I experienced is the love that my children gave me. That's it.
Yeah. For me, I think for me, well, some of you know, I'm kind of experiencing a new old love.
We
knew each other. my ex-husband and I have reconnected, and we have reconnected after 34 years of not seeing each other. And it was always with him, and there was never that moment where we recognized that we had this love between us. It was this comfort level between us when we connected, that thing that made him never really be a stranger to me, or me never really being a stranger to him. We had survived some of the same traumas when we were younger, and were able to connect with each other because we understood each other in that way. But the love between us grew very organically, and it became a centerpiece for both of us. But we were so young when we were together that we allowed other people who claimed to know better for us to tear us apart. And now that we are older, we realize that our connection was never really over, that we were hoodwinked into believing that we didn't belong together. And now that we have reconnected and found each other, there's nothing that can get between us at this point. We can talk about any and everything and share in any and everything. And it's not just about any one thing. It's about the fact that we have this understanding of each other that nobody else has ever shared with us, that keeps us connected. He kind of sort of knows when things aren't right with me. I kind of sort of know when things aren't right with him. I don't have to tell him, or he doesn't have to tell me everything for me to understand what it is that's going on at the moment. And that kind of connection is very rare to find. And I realized with him coming back into my life that I looked for that in other people and saw parts and pieces of him in other people that I've been involved with, but they were never truly him. And now that he is back, I understand now what we had in the first place. And now it's all about us bringing that connection full circle.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you want to say something, Juina, because the way you're breathing.
I'm not breathing hard. I'm sorry. But I was just I really admire. I admire Lisa Litt's story, how much I know about it, and the beautiful poetry that has come from it. So I was just sighing to hear more of how that has grown with her. I think that's so beautiful. But when it's my personal experience, I think, well, for one, I think that there exists a healthy attachment. There is a such thing as having healthy attachment with people, but if for so many of your relationships you've had unhealthy attachments, it kind of get a bad rap to me. I feel like too many of my past relationships were built on trauma, bonding in a state of trauma, and being responsible for maintaining that even when I saw that it wasn't healthy and it was downright toxic. So, yeah, I think at this stage in my life, I really would value more a relationship built on a connection that was genuine and not something that just served a purpose of, like, survival. That I yearn for that. That is something that I would love to be able to to exist in, without feeling that it's going to disconnect at some point. You're so used to unhealthy attachments, you come at it a different way, I think.
That's real, too. That's real, too. This conversation has been like a conversation. God damn. So we get something to drink. I don't know. I think about what I didn't know. What wasn't known to me, what I didn't get a chance to understand or to come to terms with because of how things were. Like, I think this is going to be very loud, and this kid is actually right here. What I think is when I was growing up, I really had a serious Boy Scout mentality. Like I always wanted to see the hope in everything. I always wanted to see things having a positive effect or something of that sort. Hold on for 1 second. But more importantly, I felt like I would weigh the nature of love by how my parents were or were not together. Actually, now I see it's a little fucked up. But, it's a little fucked up, but, my relationship with music is that whenever my mother played certain records, it felt like love. Whenever she was angry, played certain records. You could feel her anger. She was more mad about being alone and not mad that she caused the reason for her to be alone. My father was the one who was going to sit around and allow somebody to browbeat the fuck out of him and say stuff. And, my mother would tell me stories like my father would say, he's like, you're very belligerent. And my father would just get up and leave. He wouldn't stick around for the drink, right? And so I didn't really understand this story. And my mother would have these crazy responses. And I thought the shit was normal. I was like, oh, this is normal. This is what you're supposed to be. You're supposed to But the woman, she's supposed to get all crazy. You know, my mother's like, no, that's not what's supposed to happen. And so only after the fact to come to an understanding of what it was. Like, sometimes I felt like a person had to be belligerent in order for you to understand that they loved you. I felt something for you. The response, the emotional response. You know, there's a comedian that's on Facebook, and he's like, nothing makes you miss your crazy ex-girlfriend except your emotionally healed girlfriend. Don't want to tell me I'm a loser. All this other stuff. He said, we schedule sex via Google. And he's like, I hit maybe. But it comes out to the fact of someone being so in such a bad, toxic relationship that you love the toxicity. And a lot of us form our relationships like that. We're attached to that. You know, part of my attachment was attached to toxic relationship. I stayed with someone who was fucking me up emotionally, you know, Every chance they got. They was like, oh, I'm going to just get this person because I can't, you know. It was a little crazy. And so, and the weird thing was, like, during my divorce, I met someone remarkably, very healing, you know, very, very healing. No, I couldn't get out of bed, you know. I'm really mad that I couldn't get out of bed. I'm really mad that I put it upon myself. I was just like, I love the toxicity so much that I can't get out of bed because I need more of it. I need to keep being the supply of somebody malignant and narcissist because I have no other purpose in life. Asshole shit. Anyway, to move beyond that and be like, yo, that person was really, really healthy, really, really healed. You know, kicked me in my ass. Like, me and my sister having this conversation was crazy. He's like, yeah, she could kick you in your ass. She's like, she's the only people I've ever seen you. She say something, you'd be like, okay. Because, you know, normally I'd just be like, nah, I ain't doing that. Fuck it. Fuck you talking. But that being said,
but I mean, it's what you see in your parents' relationship is normal, and when you're a kid coming up, because you don't know anything different. So what you see as your parents relating to each other is what your ideal of what a relationship is, whether you consciously chose it or not, because it's the only relationship you get to watch as a kid. So coming up, when you're getting into those ages where you're thinking about relationships, the only example you have are your parents. So you're bound to follow some of their bad footsteps.
Well, I'll put it to you. Let me take it a little bit deeper, right? So, you know, imagine your father has kidnapped you from your mama and hide you in the mountains, right? Dead ass. Dead serious. Actually happened. You know, where I be talking about poems, you know, being up in the mountains, stuff like that. like that shit really, all that shit really happened, right? Dead ass. But more importantly, you know, when I came back, when you came to my grandmother's house, you know, my grandmother was super Georgia. Super sometimey, you know, like now I think about stuff like, you know, growing shit in the backyard, growing watermelon, watering shit, doing stuff like that. All that shit was super real because that's what he was transferring culture to me. I know, but I got to see my grandparents. But my grandfather had PTSD from fighting the wars that he was in. He was an alcoholic, and we all had to rock with that. Like, we all had to rock with it, like, to the point where even if I drink, I don't drink in mixed company. I don't drink in places I can't get home from. I don't drink in any of the, like, I'm never going to be a person that just brings strange-ass people to the house because we're all drunk and all this other stuff happens. And my grandmother really rocked with that because she loved my grandfather enough to put everything all together and keep it there. So I learned that. You know, that's a different type of attachment and toxic relationship because at that time, you know, what do you want to do with a 60-year-old man, 65-year-old man just refuses to stop drinking because of all the trauma that he's experienced growing up as a black man himself and you know, being a veteran and doing all these different things. You know, there's a lot of unhealed stuff that informs relationships, you know, when certain things are going on. And for me, like, I hate, you know, to not analyze myself like that in front of everybody because I just really don't have a choice as part of war council. But the greatest love I ever felt is always connection. It has never been attachment. attachment has only taken me out, taken me down, pulled me to the worst parts of it, put me in places that I didn't need to be, didn't allow me to be my best self or allow the brightest or the best of me to shine. And it was always that. It was always someone taking something away when I was attached to them, as opposed to being connected to someone where a connection, you know, multiple connections, not just one, because we had talked about that earlier in the show, multiple connections always lead to something greater, always lead to something that's best. And then if you form an interdependency between that, that's kind of where I feel like you need to be at when you're interdependent, where you're both individualized people, two wholes acting as one, seems to move further than that. But that's just me. I'm laying my plane. Laying my plane. That's it. Too much talk. All right. Anybody else?
See.
Everybody else? Matter of fact, oh, wow. Yo, you know the time be going. I didn't even look up. Before we get into all this and we close out the show, Mr. Van Metal.
Yes, sir.
Yo, the time went. Can we talk about what's happening at 50 Ray Universe this week?
Absolutely. It'd be my pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, join Epiphany Radio tomorrow night for the Erotic Love Zone with your host, Ms. VIP and La Pearl La Negra. Thursday nights to get down with J. Rob, the wise son, and yours truly, Poetic. Friday night, y'all, is going to be Renaissance Poetry with your host, Keith Eric and Kimbrella Renee. Saturday night, we're going to have Jess J. Gina Storm Show featuring Wallace. Sunday night, The Inspiration Factory with your host, Divine Inspiration, Paul Sampson, and Lonzo. Monday night, King and Queen's Quarters with Queen Simmons and King Atterbury. And then next Tuesday, we'll be right back here with one of Mojave's great shows, Honey Dripper 2.0, The Hidden.
Nope.
Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and all that good stuff.
Nope.
Mojave, which show?
Oh,
wait.
Yes, that's the show. It's the show. It's the annual show. It is the annual show. The annual show, of course, which is...
Well, there you have it.
Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, whatever show.
The annual show.
When we play all the blackest Christmas songs that we can find, we're going to play all of them, all the ones that we can find, even take some black Christmas songs on that. We're going to talk about Christmas, its presents. We're going to talk about real blackest, the blackest Christmas and celebrations that we can talk about and this year. And, you know, while bringing up all these different things, we're going to talk about what you're giving people for Christmas and all that good stuff. You know, it's a fun show. It's a very fun show. We have fun. So make sure you come over there. Merry Christmas. Have fun. Happy Hanukkah. Whatever. Whatever. You know. Matter of fact, this year, we are going to clown people. So I don't normally do it, but I'm going to clown people. Nobody knows. We know. You know, we don't clown people in the news around Christmas and things like that. So, you know, do a little bit of research. Anyway, that's besides the point. Now, all right, so let's close out the show in grand form. All right, so first of all, I am very appreciative. Like, if I don't say it, this is one thing I really want to get in the habit of making sure. I appreciate and love every single one of you here on War Council who participate, come through, rock out with me, share yourselves, share your time, push all of this good energy out into the, you know, the universe and bring it all back. I want to sincerely thank you from the bottom of my heart for being here with me. So, you know, I love you guys. And don't forget to write. And all of that. You know, have such distinct personalities. That's the thing. All right. So it's fun stuff. But more importantly, like, you know,
even if it's just us, it doesn't even matter who's listening, because I'm so committed to hearing what's in your hearts, and it really forms really good. I can do research, but also other stuff, but the conversations that we have are the most substantial things that we're doing. The soul gems and stuff that we drop, you know, check-ins, we're talking about things like, you know, like, and Lisa, you know, because I know the story too, like it's one of the most beautiful things. Like, yo, you know, matter of fact, just for the record, I've taken to calling that person the Big Drip. He knows why. Anyway. Big Drip. He knows why. Like, what is this deal? You know, but that being said, how did y'all feel about the topic this evening?
It was amazing.
I've enjoyed it.
Yeah. Definitely.
Awesome. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Now, I know it had to be good, man, because, you know, we opened up the thesaurus and we said your name three times and you appeared. You know it's serious. You know we was missing you, because Van threw up the bat signal and you came right away straight away.
When he listened to this playback, man, and he hear me, he go, but yeah, I had to come in here. Let me go get Wendell. Let me go get him right now.
I had to run up. You know, I was a little serious. You know, all we need was, like, you know, I knew that Yahoo was busy. You know, and you know, sometimes you gotta catch Joan when she's ready. But you guys put out substantial conversation, really amazing. But since we have 90 seconds, it's a school night. I want to thank everybody who came out this evening. Make sure that you follow all the shows that are happening on Epiphany 9 o'clock every night here on Epiphany Radio Universe. The number is 319-537-6300. Press 1 to be heard. Power Pack, incredible. Every show is different. Everybody is unique. You never hear the same thing twice. Good content, good music. But more importantly, check out all the people who appear on War Council. I didn't put up an event page. I saw normally. Shout out to Tila Shaw. She usually is very, very helpful and everything else. And I didn't even tell her because I had an emergency and I had to handle an emergency. And it was a little crazy. Like I literally had to handle it. And so I was kind of messing up a little bit. But it's okay. You know, we're going to have everything ready for next week. I'm going to be all up in everybody's playlist. So I don't hear nothing. If you hear music from your particular playlist, it's because I didn't want to load no music, and I'm being lazy. So, yeah, Van, I'm in your list. Danielle, I'm in your list. Pharrell, I'm in your list. I'm just going to be in your list. That's what's going to happen. I don't particularly care. I'm just going to be in your list. But we'd like to thank y'all for coming out to War Council. Egalitarian Concert Community Panel Discussion Dialogues Around Tonight has been Connection versus Attachment. We were joined by Lisa Lips, Danielle, Van, the good brother Wendell, a.k.a. Mr. Eloquent, open up the thesaurus and say his name three times. He'll appear. And Katrina. And thank you for checking everything else out. And it was rocking with y'all. But, you know, God bless, be safe, wash your hands. Be careful of certain people in airports that stand over your shoulder and want to read your phone, and they'd be mad when you're like, why are you reading my phone? Get your breath off my neck. Breath. You know, like I learned so much by going to these airports. Like, and she wasn't even shy about it. Like, she literally was like turned around and was just reading my phone, and I'm sitting here like, yo, I feel your breath on the nape of my neck. You're too close.
That's a good line, Javi. That's a good line.
Yeah, that's
a good line. I done wrote it down already.
Yeah, listen. Right, and then right. So there's people like so on the plane when I got to Nashville. Like there was a dude. He was coughing up eight lungs. Like he was doing this. So I'm sitting here like he didn't have no mask.
He have nothing. Oh, and he was just coughing on the plane. And I was just like, yo, I was like, that don't sound human. I was like, you don't sound human. It sounds bad. It just sounded crazy. And like, and it was like, and it was like cat a corner to me. And I'm sitting here like this. So I got my sweatshirt over my nose. Like, it's not helping out. But he was like, oh, it was disgusting. It was like crazy. I was like, I didn't know what to do with myself. It was nuts. And it was like on the plane home, yo, everybody, like, I thought people was having, they had these little packages. I was like, yo, everybody got these little packages. They all had pets on the damn plane. And this one couple, they had, like, I thought they had dogs. They had cats. And the lady was like, well, you know, like, did you know that they will give you a pet carrier to take your pet? Because if your pet carrier is too big, it's wild. I didn't even know that. And he was like, yo, you got to go in the bathroom and take him out. He starts running around here. I was like, yo, do people let their pets get loose on the plane? Nuts. Somebody had a full-grown German Shepherd on the plane with them and had a whole row to themselves because it's a German Shepherd. But I couldn't complain because she was black. She was black. But it was great. I was like, what's up? Oh, she's black, though. Black people, hey, we moving up in the world. Matter of fact, most of the people who had pets on the plane were black, and they were all flying Southwest. Go figure. So that's why I was like, you know, the only other thing was like they had mad babies on the plane. And so there was one baby who cried the whole flight, just the whole flight, you know, just the whole flight. And I was just like, you know, I was like, hey.
I took somebody's baby from them one time because of that, because they just kept passing the child back and forth. I was like, can I hold your baby for, I mean, just let me hold your baby for a minute. I think I can comfort him. I wrestled him down and tied him arms so he couldn't be flailed around. He went to sleep. It was over.
Now, that's not good. Excuse me, I told you. You know, at least you know what you did, right? You put the titty on.
That's old school, though. That's what we do. I do it. That baby can't get comforted by his mother. Can I hold him for a second? Put him right up there on the Twin Towers and hold him, nuzzle him, rock him a little bit, and they're good to go.
The Twin Towers.
I'm just saying,
that'll put me to sleep every time.
Listen, pillow.
Right.
It's great. Yo, dead ass. Because you know what I'm starting? You know, I wonder if somebody could do a study to see if how many, you know, like flat-chested white women that they don't control their kids that get on the plane because they ain't got no pillows to put the baby on. I just want to know if that's a thing. I got to check that out. Because boobies win every time. The boobies win all the time, you know. It just does.
Y'all saw my grandbaby.
They are undefeated. The undisputed heavyweight champions of the world.
Yeah, and that's real love that we're giving. That's real love and comfort that we're giving. It ain't something fake. It's coming. Come on. Yeah.
No, that's real.
Y'all make
no,
you. Y'all come on right to me. Come here.
No, no. I'm just telling you. They should actually, you know, because I realize like every airport has something different. Like they have sleep centers at airports now. Like I guess your layover is like real big. Like you know, like I really gotta get American Express because the lounge at American Express looked crazy. They had live entertainment, everything else. They had a bouncer at the door. It was nuts. It was like a club in the airport.
Wow.
Crazy. But imagine they had like places you can go, like you can literally go and lean, and it's like a big boobies that you put your head on like a pillow. There'd be so many people in their sleep. I know I would be one of them, but I would be, you know. And I was like, yo, what's this called? It's called titty. T-I-D-D-Y. Titty. What's the titty? You can get a full-on rest. Our nipples is fantastic. It's number one. Like, our nipplage is number one. Maybe having, like, wars over nipplage and stuff like that. But like, no, we got the better nipplage over here. You don't want to go over there, you know? They were like, you got dark areolas, pink areolas.
Oh,
you got the softest areolas on the face of the planet. And you can plug your phone in and charge your phone wireless. Like, wireless charging your phone. Now, let me stop. This is so crazy. I'm mad. Like, they don't have, like, regulation in the, like, so, and what, like, when you go to one airport, so, like, the Charlotte airport, right, I brought a drink. Like, I got a green tea, right? And I know they're going to hit you with the prices. But the green tea was $2.99. So I said, fine, it's not that bad, you know. I get into Nashville. They were like, yeah, same, like, I got another drink. It was $4. I was like, four whole motherfucking dollars. And they added 3 cents on top of that. I said, that's so dangerous. I was like, you could just make it an even four. You had to add the extra 3 cents. She was like, yeah. She was like, okay. Yeah, yeah, that's what we had to do. I was just like, yeah, I'm not buying food in here. Like, you know. Although I did buy some Burger King because I was hungry. Extortion. It looked good. Smelled good. Huh?
That's extortion. That's what that is.
Not that's the airplane. That's what they can get you, because that's the reason why you can't bring food in there. You can't bring no food, like anything. You can't bring no drinks in there. They're not gonna let you bring no drinks. They'll make you throw it out. You can't bring no lotions in there. I checked my bag and I forgot my Beats headphones in the bottom of my Nomadic bag. So I was like upset because I had a super long day over in Nashville, and so I was like, maybe I can find some cheap headphones. And so when I went to go find some headphones, they was like, yeah, $40. I was like, you know what? F you. F you in his own. F you for everybody who thought about this. I was like, F you. I was like, you want $40? It was $39.99. I was like, F you. F you and everything about you. I'm not doing it. It was the worst thing ever. I was like, you know.
Wow.
I get home, I got like five pairs of the same type of headphones. Not even like it's the old ones that come with your depending on the phone you got. But you know, the ones that plug into your ear that you plug into part of your phone. And, like, they want $40 for that joint. I was like, yo, that's crazy.
Oh my God.
I can do it. Anyway, let me let y'all go. It's been a fantastic time. In the new year, let's talk about some things. Figure out what we're gonna do. I was watching Joel's show today, and I was like, yo, how much fun would that be to go to StreamYard and do one War Council show, on StreamYard to see how it comes out? What do y'all think?
That would be pretty dope.
Yeah, it would. That would be real dope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, because people don't know what we look like, you know. I just tell people I'm ugly. Don't worry about it.
Be right.
But anyway, let me go over here. I have set this kid in, and he's been waiting for me to get off the thing. He's ready to go to bed. Love you guys. Talk to y'all soon. Be at peace.
Love
and
you
this
too.
Show will suck.
Love you,
bro.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.
3, 2, 1.